Welcome to Bible Center Church, and thank you so much for joining us on BC Podcast. Here's a message to encourage your heart this week.
Well, good morning to you, and welcome again. Hasn't this been an amazing service already? Just incredible to watch these kids leading us the way that they have. 1 Timothy chapter 4 this morning, if you have your Bible or a Bible app, 1 Timothy chapter 4, just a couple verses. As we look at how we continue to be challenged as a church that is now over 80 years old, how do we continue to the cycle of multi-generational discipleship? How do we look up 80 years from now and Bible Center has continued to reach the next generation? Because many of us in this room stand on the shoulders of people who invested and reached us. And so how do we continue that legacy? 1 Timothy chapter 4, we're going to look at just a couple verses this morning that I think challenge us in that way. This is Paul to a young pastor, Timothy. He says this, starting in verse 11. Command and teach these things. Don't let anyone despise your youth, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. In the late 1800s, there was a large shoe company in America. And this shoe company became aware of an emerging market in the nation of India. For the first time, they become aware of this market, this growing market. And so in response to that awareness, they decided that they were going to send two scouts from America to India to just figure out if this was the right market for this shoe company to expand to. And in the late 1800s, that was a trip to make it from America to India. So they sent these two scouts. And a few months later, these scouts sent back two separate telegrams based on what they saw to the shoe company in America. The first telegram said this. It said, "Send return ticket. No one here wears any shoes." First telegram. Second telegram said this. "No one here wears shoes. Send every pair of shoes you have. This is the great opportunity." Sometimes I think we think about students and the next generation as being the church of tomorrow. That one day when they grow up and they mature and they reach whatever it is that they reach, they become part of the church. And what I want to challenge us is today that God has put the church together in a unique way where all of us are part of this body together and we all contribute. We all bring something to this body. And there's an opportunity in front of us that maybe has not existed before in any of our lifetimes to reach the next generation. Things have shifted. Things have changed, even within our country, within the world. There's something unique going on. I've been in student ministry my whole career, and there's something totally unique going on right now that has not happened before now. It's the great opportunity in front of us. For 80 years, Bible Center's had a heartbeat, a position, a value of reaching the next generation. And I want to encourage us today to double down on that. Students are not the church of tomorrow. They're the church of today. They are with us and leading us even today. There's some alarming stats, if you're aware of generations and, you know, boomers and millennials and Gen Z and Gen X and Alpha and, you know, all these different generations that we talk about within culture today. There's some alarming stats when you look at Gen Z, which many of them are reaching their 20s now. Gen Z is the loneliest generation. 73% of Gen Z would say that they experience loneliness. 42% have been diagnosed with mental health conditions. 57% are taking medication for mental health. 30% identify as LGBT, highest suicide rate since World War II. 71% would acknowledge addiction to pornography. 40% were born out of wedlock. 34% live in single-parent homes, and more than one-third of Generation Z would be religious nuns, meaning they don't have a background, an upbringing, a history, a faith that they would attach to in any way. They would say, "We don't have that." as part of our life. And so you read that, you look at that, you look at those stats kind of as you boom, 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 kind of right through them. And it's alarming. You look at that and you go, oh my goodness, something is wrong. Something's happening within our culture. Something's taking place within our culture. And you'd be right. There's a shift that's going on within our culture right now, and it's really affecting the next generations. And there's all kinds of things that we could point to that are part of that, but it's really affecting our next generations. And so someone might look at that and say, okay, all is lost. This is bad, this is alarming, it's going the wrong way, all is lost. And others might look at that and say, this is the greatest opportunity for a return, a revival, a pointing to Jesus that maybe our country has ever seen. We look at it that way. Look at some of these stats. State of the church. So Barna did some surveys on the state of the church. Young people, especially young men, are leading a shift in our country toward Jesus right now. If you go left to right, you kind of see Gen Z, Millennial, Gen X, Boomer. And you'll notice the lines in Gen X in particular, they start to skyrocket over the past 6 years. This generation is facing so much uncertainty, so much shifting within our culture, so much of wondering why we're here and what's going on and why does it all matter and what are they doing? They're turning to faith. They're turning to the church for answers. This is people who are part of these generations who have made a commitment to follow Jesus. They're looking for something solid. They're looking for something that has hope, something that matters, and they're turning to Jesus. From 2019 to 2025, the commitment to Jesus in Gen Z men rose by 15 points. 6 years, it rose by 15 points. As far as attending church goes on a weekly basis, when you go back to 2019, pre-pandemic, it kind of went down the line. Boomers were the highest attending weekly, and then it was Gen X, and then it was Gen Z trailing, or millennials that was trailing that. Now you fast forward through the pandemic into 2023, which is where these stats kind of stop, and it's completely switched. Millennials are now leading the charge in attending church weekly. 39% of millennials report attending church weekly. There is something going on in our country. God is moving in our country. He's working in our country. He's drawing people to himself. They are looking for Jesus. And so we as a church have an opportunity, maybe unlike we've ever seen in our history, to reach the next generation for Christ. It's right in front of us, waiting for us to jump in. And so this morning I've got kind of two parts to this message. I've got a part that is designed for the young people in the room. We're just going to say the young people in the room, if you're 40 and below, you would be the young people in the room. And that, by the way, that age is going to continue to change as I get older. Just putting that out there, all right? The young people in the room, if you're 40 and below, you're kind of considered in this world, in these generations, kind of considered to be the young people. And then I have a part of this message that's for us, who are in the older generations. We're above 40, and we have a role to play as we reach the next generation. But the first thing that we see here is what we looked at when Paul was talking to Timothy. Paul's writing this letter to Timothy, and he says this to Timothy. He says, Timothy, command and teach these things. Don't let anyone despise your youth. That word despise there could be looked down on or dismiss is the concept. Timothy, at this point in his life, he's a young pastor. He's trying to figure life out, and he's trying to figure out, you know, how do I lead this church, and what do I do with this, and all the stuff that's going on around me. Timothy is probably in his mid-30s at this point in his life. And so Paul, as a mentor, is writing to Timothy and teaching him how to do this. And he says, don't let anyone despise your youth or dismiss your youth, but instead, set an example for all the believers. So don't let anyone dismiss or look down on your youth. Instead, turn that and you become an example. Much like what we've seen this morning as our students are leading us in so many ways. You become an example of what it means to follow Jesus. Don't let youth be the thing that sidetracks you. Don't be youth be the thing that distracts you from following Christ. Set an example. And so if you find yourself in that category, you're kind of in that under 40 crowd, that challenge is for you by extension. So Paul's writing that to Timothy and then by extension you. He's saying, don't let your youth be in the way. Set an example for the other believers, for the church, in these ways. There's five things that he calls out. The first thing he says is the message we share. Set an example in the message that you share. This word message here is the word logos in the Greek, which means the word. It's the same word that you find throughout the New Testament describing this teaching. So it's not just speech, the way I'm talking, but there's a power in that. I'm sharing the gospel is what's driving this. So I set an example in the way that I'm sharing the word, the gospel. It's the same word you find in Luke chapter 44, spoken about Jesus. It said they were astonished at his, Jesus' teaching, because his message, his speech, his logos, his word had authority. Why did it have authority? Because he was speaking the gospel. That was the power. And so you who are young, set an example to the rest of the believers in the way that you speak the gospel, the way that you share the gospel, the way that you share your faith with others. That's a place that you can be an example. The second thing he says is the way we live. So the message we share and then the way we live, the conduct that we show. You could use this phrase, the way, how I am following Jesus with my life. I'm setting an example to the rest of the believers in the way that I'm following Jesus with my life. Peter says this in 1 Peter 2, same word, conduct yourselves honorably among the Gentiles, those who don't know Jesus, so that when they slander you as evildoers, they will observe your good works and will glorify God on the day he visits. People can argue your theology left and right all day long. They cannot argue with your life being changed. The way that you follow Jesus has impact. The way, students, that you follow Jesus has impact. And church, we're watching it. You just saw it. The way we're following Jesus, conduct yourselves in that way, the way we live, is an example to the believers. The third thing that he talks about here is the love we show. The love we show. I'm going to invite Sam Nelson, who is one of our graduates from George Washington High School. And Sam is also going to Marshall, like Gabe shared with us here a minute ago. And you got some cool stories about why you're doing that you're going to share here in a minute. But Sam's been a leader in our student ministry for quite some time. And one of the things that you've been able to be part of is the launch of this Bible study that has taken place at George Washington High School over the past several years. And so talk us a little bit about how that happened and what's going on with that.
All right, so I joined the Bible study at GW my sophomore year. We actually have some of the OG people who started the Bible study when I was a freshman. I didn't join it, but there's Brooke and Bailey over there, and then we have Larry somewhere, or he may be downstairs. Larry's right there. He started as well, and they were basically like the foundation, and then they graduated, and it was, Gabe was also in it, so we joined it, and it was just a normal Bible study. You know, it wasn't anything special. We were in the basement. And at GW, it's called the dungeon. And we were in the ROTC room. And we would be lucky to have around 10 people there. And basically, during the process, I created a Instagram page, GW Bible Study Instagram page. And that really helped us grow. You know, we could reach an audience of high schoolers through social media. And eventually we started growing more and more and getting followers. And we moved upstairs to a science room, human anatomy. And we were up there for a little bit. That could seat around 40 people. So that was better.
Yes.
And then the start of my senior year, we had our club day, which is where everyone has their clubs and their podiums up. And we I think it was around 185 signups for Bible study my senior year. A lot of
You try to just kind of slide past that. We caught it.
We would meet every Wednesday, and so our first meeting in the science room, we had around 115 people there, and the room seats about 30. So it was very it was a tight pack, and we had people in the hallway trying to peek their head in, trying to see what was going on. So we eventually had to go to the administration and ask if we could go to, it's called the health room, but it's like a big auditorium that could seat, you know, like well over 150. So that was better for us. We got to move there. So, yeah.
It's fantastic to watch that happen. And so out of that, there's been some outcomes. So that's obviously a lot of students that are invested in this way now. And God's working in their lives. And so there have been some outcomes. So tell us some of the things with this ministry growth. What's going on?
So I saw a lot of growth within the students, lots of positive feedback, not a lot of negative. And students thanking us for doing this. Some people that go to GW, maybe their parents don't take them to church. They're non-believers. So this might have been an outlet for a way for them to, you know, experience the good news and the gospel. We had teachers come to us thanking us for the Bible studies. We had teachers attending the Bible studies before class even started. And that's one of my big things that I noticed for my 3 years of doing it was I would have strangers that were not strangers, but people that I've never talked to, and they'd walk up to me and they would ask me, hey, can I lead a lesson? And it's not like it's some tiny thing for you to lead a lesson. I mean, our average students there were around 80, 85 people. And so it wasn't just some, hey, Jesus loves you, and then walk away. I mean, you'd actually have to, like, prepare something. And so it was a huge commitment for the people that walked up there that decided that they wanted to, you know, step out in their faith and make it known. Another thing was people were truly invested in during the Bible study. So it was that school starts at 8:20, and the Bible study started at 8 a.m. We had 20 minutes. The Bible study wasn't a get out of school card. Like, you know, you get to skip class and go to Bible study. That wasn't the thing. It was people woke up early, dealt with the GW traffic, and then went to this Bible study before class even started. We even had teachers who would come to class or come to the Bible study 20 minutes before their class even started just so they could see it. So that was great. And then another thing that I liked about the outcomes of it was it wasn't just Bible Center kids going to this. It was churches all over and different denominations. And then lastly, the club at GW inspired people all over West Virginia to start their own Bible clubs, which now include Hurricane, South Charleston, Cal Midland, and Winfield.
It's fantastic. Pretty cool, right? Yeah. Yeah. So we were talking about you doing this, and I said, you know, is there anything on your heart that you'd like to share? And I had not read that 1 Timothy verse yet. I was kind of thinking, you know, this is the direction we're going to go. And you said, kind of without hesitation, you know, what I talk about a lot at Bible study is love, how we love people. And I said, funny, because we're going to do a verse, 1 Timothy 4:12, that right in the middle of that is love. And so talk a little bit about that. How you lead and how you challenge students when it comes to this idea of loving.
So love is a topic that every single Bible study I would at least touch on, or my main thing would be about love. I just can't stop talking about it. And the two main things were sacrificial love and Christ-like love, kind of the same thing. But a thing that I would challenge the students to do, I called out my mom last year at the beginning service, but she's not here. So I'll call it Caleb Carney. So let's pretend that Caleb and I, we play Rocket League together. So we're playing Rocket League together, and he says something that upsets me. And the way I respond is I need to imagine that Caleb is, that Jesus is disguised as Caleb. You know, you can picture that to anyone in the room. It's one of my techniques that I like to do. It's how to treat people and love people like Jesus loves me. Is how are you going to respond to that person? And that it's how you would respond to Jesus if he was saying that to you. And then my favorite verse in the Bible is 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 4 through 5. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud, and it doesn't dishonor others. It is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, and it keeps no records of wrongs. I love the end part of that, the keeps no records of wrongs. You know, for anyone who does wrongdoing to you, you forgive them no matter what, no matter how many times. That verse is actually one of the themes that we had on our Nicaragua trip, which really stuck to me the most, and which was, you know, 1 Corinthians, you know, learning to love the people that weren't as fortunate as us when we got to travel there. And I also wanted to say that love isn't just a feeling, that it's an action. You know, you take action in loving people. It's not just the feeling of love that you get from your friends or your family, your spouse or your dog, but it's an action. Love takes sacrifice and it takes patience. And it also put the big thing that people don't think about anymore is they put themselves above other people, but the Bible calls us to put other people above ourselves. So, yeah.
So that has shaped you then, as you've experienced this Bible study and you've had the honor of teaching and sharing about that. And then as you've been in some other places in the world, including what you just mentioned, you've been to Nicaragua, and that's a shaping trip as you go and you're exposed to third world type poverty and people, all they have, literally all they have is Jesus. And so share a little bit about that, how that's changed you and your love for people.
So going to Nicaragua, being able to do that has changed my life, but I'd first want to thank Ryan Bandy for taking me on it and the team that I was with. So to touch on my team for a little bit, from our first team meeting that was months before the trip, and, you know, we all knew each other, but from the moment that we had that first meeting, you know, we all clicked. We were like family. It was perfect. And it felt more like family than team. And to the moment that we landed back in West Virginia, you know, it was the exact same as when I first met you guys, probably a little different, but, you know, just like that family. It was perfect. We discovered many things about each other. We loved each other, and we learned to love each other even more. So when I was in Nicaragua, I got to experience poverty that I've never known to be existed. When we attended this church, but we met some of the children that were at that church, and their job basically was to work in a landfill. They would collect tin and metal, and they would collect scraps, and they would put that in a bag and give it to recyclers, and they would make around $2 to $3 a day, and that's what they would live off of. And then after their shift at the landfill, they would just go back to church and they'd praise Jesus. And that's just something that really opened my eyes and made me realize that how lucky I am to live in the United States, and that it's not fair that I don't even have a reason to complain about anything in my life when there's other people that are going through so much worse than you are. It just like really allowed me to know like that there's something else that like no matter what I'm going through that you need to. I'm losing my train of thought. I'm going off on something
You're
random.
You're doing
great. then I just want to touch on the team again. So there's actually some of the Marshall crew. So we have Joshua Carter, Gabe, Gavin Duffy. I don't know if he's here, and Isaac Skidmore also. So we are all in increased array on the bus, just talking. And they asked me, they were like, where are you going to go to college? And I was like, yeah, I have no clue. And they said, well, we're all going to Marshall. And I was like, well, that's where I'm going. And then, so basically from that, it was like an impulse decision. I decided to go to Marshall. So just because they're there. So I decided to do that.
Based on your community, which is amazing. Yeah. So parting words. So challenge us. This is set an example to the believers. So challenge us a little bit. As God has worked in your life, what would you say to us as the church here?
Well, mainly to the students that are looking up or that are stepping up in leadership, you don't need some amazing gift to spread the gospel. You know, it's not just, I wasn't given some God-given gift to come up here and talk about it. I just wrote it down on my notes on the boat on the Kanawha River yesterday, actually. All you have to do is put yourself out there. That's something that I'm very fortunate, I'm very happy that I did while I was in the high school ministry, was I put myself out there. So I challenge others to do the same. You shouldn't have a fear of rejection or judgment, but only fear God and trust what he is putting you through. In Matthew, we are called out to go and proclaim the gospel and to go make fishers of men. So basically, we're called to step out, you know, invite people to church, talk to them, spread the gospel, and, you know, eventually get them saved and baptized. Yeah.
Amen. We say thank you to Sam. Thanks, brother. It's fantastic, and it leads us to the next one that Paul talks to Timothy about. So he says love, but then he moves to faith, the faith we have. So there's an example in the faith that we have. You heard that in the story there. There's a lot of faith in that story, and there's a lot that we as older people can learn from. You know, we get a little cynical as we get older, and we think, I don't know if that's going to work, and maybe this won't change. There's something about youth where our faith can just be substantial, and we need that among us. We need that in this church, and so we need you to lead us in the area of faith, that with God, anything is possible. Anything is possible. Jesus commented on someone like that in Matthew chapter 8. It says, Jesus was amazed and said to those following him, truly I tell you, I've not found anyone in Israel with so great a faith. Maybe that's you in this body, that Jesus would say that about your faith. I've not found anyone in Charleston with so great a faith. Maybe that's what he wants to do through you. Then the last one is the purity we value. The purity we value. A lot of times we hear the word purity and we go to kind of morality and sex and that kind of word and that kind of world. But this concept is actually a lot bigger than just that. It's not anchored in that. It's actually anchored in holiness. The word for purity here is from the root, the word for holiness that you find throughout the New Testament. And holiness is not necessarily a staying away from thing. But it's like we talked about this spring as we looked at the fruits of the Spirit and how they emerge in our life as we follow Jesus. What's happening is I'm living more and more into the character of God, the way that I've been designed to live. Holiness is the expression of the character of God, the fullness of the character of God. It's not just absent things, but it's the presence of the fullness of the character of God. And so as God is calling you to set an example to the believers, he's saying, set an example in this way. Live fully expressing the character of God in the way that you interact with the world, in the way that you interact with people, in the way that you interact with your family. Fully express the character of God, and you'll see these fruits of the Spirit emerge from you. Showcased in you. So how do we as a church then fan the flame? For those of us who find ourselves in the other category, in the older generation, what's our role? As this group is setting an example for us, how do we react? What do we do? How do we continue this legacy that Bible Center's had for over 80 years? The first thing is we have a future posture. We have a future posture. We continue to have a future posture. There is always a next generation to reach. And so we are going to be on the front lines of reaching the next generation. And we have to do that for the next 10 years, the next 20 years, the next 80 years. It has to be our posture. We are thinking about reaching the next generation. Methods are going to change. The way we do that is going to be different. Bible Center's got, within its history, we started downtown in a department store, and then we moved out to the boulevard, and so we were there by the river, and then we moved over to Oakhurst, and now we're out here at Southridge, and then just lately we've expanded to Nitro, and so methods are going to change. Locations are going to change. I doubt that in 1940, when they came to church that morning, they sang songs like we did this morning. Just going to put that out there. It wasn't the same. It was different. They didn't have lights moving around in an LED wall, and they didn't pull the Bible up on their phone, right? Methods change. That's just part of life. They shift, they change, and now AI, and who knows what that's going to look like in the next 10 years. Methods will continually change, and so we will speak the language of the next generation to reach them. We're going to continue to change the way we do things so that we can reach the next generation. One of the things that's remarkable to me that hasn't changed, it's more remarkable to me when something hasn't changed rather than it has. And one of those things is camp, one of the reasons we celebrate it so much. 30 years ago, I started ministry in camp. I was a junior counselor at Alpine Bible Camp down in Beckley in my teenage years before I graduated from high school. 30 years I've been part of camp, and I think it's more effective now than it was even then. It's a huge deal. That space and that time, we got to figure out how to do camp for adults, right? Yeah, you're nodding your heads like, yeah, let's do that. Like, it's a big deal. It's awesome. So we need to double down, and we need to figure out, okay, how do we do more with camp? And we're talking about that right now. We're running out of space. How do we do more with camp? But can I stop and can I celebrate those of you who have gone through method changes over your lifetime? And you have continued to invest. You have continued to sacrifice. You have continued to approach ministry with humility, even though things don't look the way that they used to look. Even though that thing might not be your preference, the music, the light, whatever it might be. That wouldn't be the way you would do it. That's not the way you love things. And you've, in the middle of that, you've lost some things that you really enjoy. But the mission has taken precedent. And you've sacrificed and you've given so that we can continue to reach the next generation. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. You're part of that legacy that hopefully we maintain so that 80 years from now, Bible Center is continuing to reach the next generation. So we have a future posture. The second thing is we fund the mission. I remember when I was in my early 20s, if you would have told me that my job was to fund the mission, I would have said, I don't know that I can even fund the water bill, right? Like, it's a different season of life. And so there's a different expectation on us in this generation where we now are equipped in a way that we may not have been before, where we can fund the mission. That's with our finances. That's with our giving. We fund the mission. People did that in my life. They gave money, not just time, not just attention. They gave money, practical money, so that I could be part of ministries, so that God could work in my life, so there was space for me at camp or mission trips or whatever it might have been, so that God could work in my life. They funded the mission. Bible Center actually put me on staff when I was a teenager, and my job was to wash vans. I was horrible at washing vans. I'm too ADD. So they never got clean, but you know what they did anyway? Paid me money. Why? Because the vans were clean? No, because they were investing in a kid. They were investing in a kid. And so part of our job as this generation is to invest in the kids, fund the mission, work in their life, get in there, and keep this cycle of discipleship moving and going. And then the last thing, and we close with this, is that we fight for gospel-centered families. Grandparents, what's your job? Fight for gospel-centered families. Parents, what's your job? Fight for gospel-centered families. That's what we bring to the table. We bring experience. We bring life. We bring an understanding of the world that's unique and that's different, that's part of this body, that's needed, that's healthy. And so we use that to fight for gospel-centered families, not for moralistic families, not for religious families, but for gospel-centered families. Think about the things that we fight for in our lives. Maybe you fight for a scholarship. Maybe you fight for a spot on a team. Maybe you fight for a spot in a play. Maybe you fight for a certain neighborhood that you want to live in, a certain club that you want to be part of. Maybe you fight because the ref made a bad call. We fight for so many things in our community, in our world, in our families. And so what I want to encourage us with is part of our role as this older generation is that we continue to fight for gospel-centered families. That's what we spend our energy on. That's our priority. That we point people to Jesus. We point people to Jesus. And 80 years from now, Bible Center is still reaching the next generations for Christ because we were faithful to what we've been called to now. We're going to close with two questions. I'm going to put them on the screen for you. And I just want to give you a few moments here as we close today to just spend some time with the Lord. just ask him these two questions. What's God saying to you? God, what are you saying to me? And then what are you going to do about it? God, what do you want me to do about it? Where do I need to step in and be an example to the believers? Young people, do I need to step out and share my faith more? Do I need to step out in faith and start something in my school? Do I need to step out in faith in my neighborhood and point people to Jesus in a way that I haven't done? Do I need to think about my team and who's on my team and how do I have gospel conversations with my teammates? Where is God calling you? What's he doing in your life? How is he calling you to be an example to us? And then those in the second generation, is your focus on the future? Is your focus on you and your own stuff and your own likes and dislikes? Or are you thinking, how do we reach people? How do we reach people? Are you investing to fund the mission so that more people can know Christ? Are you using your energy and your resources and your time to fight for gospel-centered families? Are you using your influence and your leverage to fight for gospel-centered families? What's God saying to you? And what are you going to do about it? Take a few moments here as we close and just consider those questions.
For more information, visit us at BibleCenterChurch.com and give us a follow on all platforms at Bible Center.